Welcome back to The Takeaway. It's Todd Zwillick with you today. The FBI having a direct, albeit covert, role in politics is something that most people thought had been left behind in the era of J. Edgar Hoover. But beyond the scandal of the moment, whether it's Director James Comey's reopening the email investigation weeks before the election, or the FBI allegedly investigating Trump campaign officials for ties to Russia, the agency has vastly expanded its reach and power since 9/11. Surveillance and investigations of individuals and entire communities are easier now than ever before at the Bureau, mostly in the name of counterterrorism. Now, presidents since 9/11 have tested the limits of executive power at the FBI. Meanwhile, President Trump seems intent on blowing through new barriers in the justice system, attacking judges who rule against his immigration policies, for instance. The Intercept has uncovered thousands of pages of previously unreleased FBI documents and manuals and reported on them in an 11-part series called The FBI Secret Rules. It's all about the scope of the FBI's expanded powers that have been building up for more than 15 years. Trevor Aronson is contributing writer at The Intercept, and he joins me now. Trevor, welcome to The Takeaway.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Well, you have a very broad look at many of the powers that the FBI has accumulated in the post-9/11 world, but help us understand how the agency's powers to investigate and surveil have expanded over the last 15 years.
Right. So what these documents taken together provide is basically a rule book for how the FBI operates in an undercover manner. And what they show very clearly is that what we all knew, which was that the FBI had over, you know, the 16 years since 9/11 transformed from a criminal investigations agency into more of an intelligence agency. And these documents show in great detail some of the vast powers that we didn't quite understand until now. And these include the FBI's ability to, for a 72-hour period, investigate just about anyone, you know, you, me, clergy, lawyers, you know, your neighbor, to see if they might be a good informant. And they can do this without having any sort of suspicion that the person was involved in criminal behavior or, you know, the typical threshold, which is a criminal predicate. For 72 hours, they can investigate just about anyone. And those files, the information that they unearth during those investigations, can live in the FBI's files and servers for years, if not decades. And what we see in these files is that, you know, the powers that the FBI now has have very few checks. In many cases, they only need the approval of a local supervisor. In other cases, they don't even need, you know, kind of Justice Department approvals.
Now, what you're talking about there, Trevor Aronson, is something euphemistically at the Bureau called assessments. And it's supposed to be a lower sort of level threshold than an actual investigation. So you're talking about sort of a speed bump here that if the Bureau gets over, they can spend 3 days collecting huge amount of information on any individual, any group, even a whole community if they think there's a security threat.
That's right. You know, the initial idea of the assessments wasn't a bad one, which is it was to say, you know, look, getting a warrant, getting the type of approvals that we need in an age of counterterrorism might not be the best thing for national security. When we have a really bad guy who we think is about to do something, you know, we need to be able to investigate him very quickly. But what we've seen is that assessments have been expanded beyond cases where there's an immediate threat or immediate perceived threat by an individual, such that, you know, for 72 hours, you know, for any, just about anyone could be subject to these types of assessments or investigations.
So numbers obtained by the New York Times showed that the FBI had opened more than 82,000 assessments between 2009 and 2011. That sounds like a huge number and sort of sounds like a fishing expedition on the part of the agency. The agency says, actually, that number tells you how hard we're working to not investigate everybody because it weeds out a lot of people.
That's true. You know, when you look at Omar Mateen, for example, who is the man who was involved in the Orlando nightclub shooting, they did do two assessments on him prior to his attacking. So there was an effort, and the system essentially was working then when they identified a possible threat and used the assessment process to investigate him in the hopes that if they could prove he was dangerous, move him into a full criminal investigation. You know, unfortunately for all of us, that assessment process ultimately didn't doesn't yield a criminal investigation, but there are examples where assessments are applied to people who we later find out, yeah, that person was dangerous, and that makes sense to do that type of work. I mean, in the FBI's view, what they're trying to do is avoid larger expensive resources on every tip that they get. The problem is that these types of processes are open to abuse, and these guidelines clearly show that there aren't a lot of checks and balances in place to prevent, for example, the FBI investigating a journalist who might be writing things that are unfavorable to the FBI, or, you know, in the situation we are now with a president who has clearly shown a certain amount of vindictive behavior against people who don't rule in the way he would like. Whether that has happened yet, we certainly don't know. But
let's talk about that for a moment, because it's important. These powers did not expand under Donald Trump, but is there a particular concern with President Trump having this type of power, this type of expanded reach of the FBI at his fingertips?
I think there's a lot of reason to be concerned. You know, I mean, he's already labeled the media, for example, the opposition party. And, you know, one of the powers that the FBI now has through these assessments is the ability to investigate journalists and find out who they're talking to, for example. You know, Barton Gellman, the Washington Post reporter who was among those who received the documents from Edward Snowden, you know, has disclosed that his phone records were pulled through a national security letter. And in that case, under these guidelines, the FBI is allowed to obtain the information from journalists when it's investigating a leak without any sort of approval from a judge. It just requires approval from within the FBI. And what's concerning is that these expansive powers that the FBI has could potentially be used against journalists or even people of the political opposition.
The Intercept has a very broad look at the powers the FBI has accumulated since 9/11. It's in 11 parts. It deals with everything from national security letters and assessments to surveillance, recruiting informants. You can read it all on The Intercept's website. Trevor Aronson, contributing writer, thank you for walking us through it.
Of course, Todd. Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.